Chasdei Hashem. It's amazing, Baruch Hashem, to be here. Here Befrat, here Bechlal. It's the fourth year, Baruch Hashem, that we've had the schus to come to the Yom Naram together in this shul, in this makom. And I want to begin, as always, by thanking the people who made it possible. I want to thank, of course, Rabbi Przanski, the Morad Astron, Rabbi Zatz. I want to thank the president of B'nai Yeshurun, Steve Margulies. I want to thank Henry Rolinsky, who worked behind the scenes to allow this to happen once again. I want to thank my father. I want to thank Michael Schwartz for making sure that the air condition would be pumping strong. Those who remember, last year was a little warm. I want to thank Neil Bodner for making sure that there'd be Slichos books for everyone. Also want to just point out that the Slichos books are not to keep. There was a little confusion about that, so they're not. Please make sure to return the Slichos books. We thank TABC for lending them to us. I want to thank Yoni Fleischman for helping out as well. And of course, last but certainly not least, Kol HaKal HaKadosh Hazeh. You know, I always refer to this chavra, this gathering, as a kehila. A little bit of a funny term, a little bit of a misnomer. What type of kehila gets together for a few hours a year? But I really feel, and I say this about Emmis, I really feel that every year when we get together, those who've been here before and those who are here for the first time, I really feel that there's this unbelievable sense of kehila here. That there's a sense of Rov Am Hadras Melech, in a time where we're thinking about crowning HaKadosh Baruch Hu, making Hashem Melech once again. And there's a feeling that can't really be described. It's tamu ru, it's tasted, and you'll see. Those who've been here know what it is. And those who are here for the first time, you'll experience it, you'll taste it. There's a feeling of achdus, there's a sense of avas yisrael, there's a sense of bikush, of longing for kirvas elukus. That again, people who've never, many people haven't met each other in a revealed sense, but understand in the deepest of ways that the nishmas yisrael is not just connected, but it's be'etzem one thing. That all of the Jewish people be'etzem are one thing. So Ashreinu Matov Chalkenu, as Bilam HaRasha acknowledged, Truas Melech Bo, that Klal Yisrael have a trua, a reyus with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, a certain friendship, a certain kirva that we have even towards the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But as the Svarim HaKadoshim say, Truas Melech Bo, to whatever degree there's a sense of reyus, V'haftal Reyach HaKamocha, Truas Melech Bo, to whatever degree there's a sense of reyus, that Jews come together, and Jews are united. And again, even Jews who don't know each other and necessarily spend a lot of time together throughout the rest of the year, that's how we're mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how the Melech is also bo. The Melech is also part of such a gathering. I can tell you personally that I think about this all year. I look forward to this all year. But at the same time, as we come to tonight, and there's this unbelievable excitement, and I was walking around, I kept saying to people today, I can't wait to daven tonight. It's so special. It's so meaningful and it's so real. Right? But with all the excitement, with all the hesoros and all the energy and desire to be here and to connect in this way once again, but at the same time we have to be so careful. Because what we're entering into is the Yom Naram. We're entering into very intense days. It's a time that has to be approached, obviously with simcha, of course, as well, as I wrote in the email, many of you saw. But it also has to be with a pachad. It's a very serious time. It's a very frightening time. The lease is up. Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us a lease every year and we're behind on our payments and the lease is up. And a Jew comes before the Melech Malchei Melechim Kadosh Baruch Hu and we want to renew the lease. You want to beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu to ask for another year of life. People often say, you know, we're saying Slichos. What time are we saying Slichos? When are we davening Slichos? Rabbi Leib Chassman used to point out, a Jew doesn't say Slichos. A Jew doesn't even daven Slichos. A Jew asks Slichos. We ask Slich of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And while we're confident that HaKadosh Baruch Hu only wants to give us bracha, and give us chayim, and give us all the good things that a Jew desires, but at the end of the day we're asking, we're begging HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're begging HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be willing to grant us the slicha that we all desire. Someone once came to Rav Baruch of Mezhbush and said, Rebbe, you know, I went through that whole formality that everyone goes through before Rosh Hashanah, before Yom Kippur. You know, Rebbe, are you mochel me? If I did anything wrong, are you mochel me? So Rav Baruch of Mezhbush looked at him in his typical sharp way and he smiled and he said, Salachti kidvaracha. Salachti kidvaracha means I'll give you, there's as much slicha in my heart. The feelings of forgiveness that I have towards you is in accordance with your word. If your words are sincere, if you're really asking mechila, then I'm really granting mechila. And if this is just a formality that you go through the motions and you say, are you mochel me? Are you mochel me? And then we get back to the way that it always was. So Rav Baruch Meshbitzer said, I'm not so quick to be mochel you. Salachti kidvaracha. You come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem Tzilcha. Hashem responds to us the way that we present ourselves to Him. And therefore we come to tonight with all the excitement, with all the hisoris, and with the simcha, because tshuva has to be done b'simcha as well. But there's a feeling of something very serious that's taking place tonight. And the stakes are very high, and the tshuva that we need is very great. And the rachmanis that we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have for us is very real. That we don't walk into this room with a false sense of confidence. Because Rachman al-Tzan, there were people who were in this room last year who are not in the world anymore. When a Yid does a veros, when a Jew is nichshol, I mean tzadik baretz triyasa tova lo yachta, every Jew in the world stumbles, each in our own way. Right? But it's a very real thing. I saw the Siach Sarfei Kodesh brings by one of the tzaddikim. It says every year he used to buy new dishes for Pesach. He'd go and he'd manage to buy a whole new set of dishes, a big expense, as if Pesach wasn't expensive enough. He'd buy a whole new set of dishes every year for Pesach. He said, what was the hesber? Why did he buy new dishes every year? So he said, the Arizal tells us that a person who's perfectly nizhar from chametz on Pesach won't come to do any averos during the year. So the tzaddik used to say, I did averos during the year. Which means by definition, if I take the words of the Arizal seriously, that means last year, I wasn't completely nizhar from chametz on Pesach, which means my dishes aren't kosher for Pesach. And he went and he bought a whole new set of dishes for Pesach. That's a person who understood that this is not a joke, this is not a game, this is not a mere formality, where we come and we say the words and we expect results. We come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is very serious to us. And yes, there's a tremendous simcha, and yes, there's a hisoros, and yes, that's a big part of the way that we, so to speak, coerce and push HaKadosh Baruch Hu to forgive us. But again, it's never with a sense of levity. It's never with a sense of lightheadedness. It's with a sense of the utmost seriousness. And that's why we begin the Slichos tonight. The opening words that we say, of course, after Ashrei, we enter into the tune of the Kaddish, the tune, the Nusach of the Yom Naran. But we immediately begin, L'cha Hashem Atztaka, V'lanu Boshas Apanim. We say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're embarrassed to even look at you. L'cha Hashem Atztaka, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you do so much staka for us. You always have, you always will. And lanu boshas apanim, we don't treat you. We don't treat you, Borei Olam, the way that you deserve to be treated. I read a story in the Sefer. The Sefer actually says that the story is true. But sometimes a machaber will say that just to get people to take his story seriously. I hope it's a mashal. I mamish hope it's a mashal. Sefer says it's true, but I hope it's a mashal. It was a wedding, a beautiful wedding. Imagine, a beautiful wedding. Magnificent wedding. And such a simcha by the chasen and kala. And it's beautiful, beautiful everything, just the way that you could imagine. And now it's time for the dancing and the chasen and kala. They walk into the room and the dancing begins. And the chasen and all of his friends, you know, the bnei yeshiva, they circle around the chasen. And everyone is swirling and twirling. And the father of the chasen is about to enter the circle for the first time to dance with his son. And he sees it's very hot. There's a lot of people there. And in order to make himself a little more comfortable right before he enters the circle, as he's about to join his son for the first dance, he slips off his jacket, he puts it over the back of his chair, and the crowd parts, and he walks into the middle, and he's dancing, and the room is swirling with his son. He's filled with simcha, and they're dancing, and they're singing, and finally, you know, the young, energetic son has a lot more energy than his father. The father's hands finally drop. And the father pulls out from the circle to give someone else a chance to go into the circle. And he goes back to pick up his jacket, to put his jacket back on. Now anyone who saw the face of this father, as he put the jacket back on, would have seen that his father, this individual's face turned white. Because instinctively, as he put the jacket back on, he reached into his pocket. He stuck his hand for a moment into his pocket, and his face turned mamish white. In that pocket was $10,000 that he had brought along to the wedding to pay for some of the night's expenses. And in the couple minutes that he was dancing with his son, somehow, that envelope which was secretly tucked into the inner pocket of his jacket had disappeared. He's thinking, should I call the police? Should I make a whole scene? It's my son's wedding. I don't want to share the simcha. Besides, it's no small chunk of change, but okay, it's going to cost me an extra $10,000 tonight. And the wedding went on, and it was a beautiful wedding. And a few weeks after the wedding, Shavuot Brachos was over. And all of a sudden, the video arrives from the photographer. And the chassan, and the kala, and her parents, and his parents, and some of the other siblings, they sit down to watch the video. And they're watching, and they see the bedekin, and they see the chuppah. And finally, they see the dancing. And as they're watching this video of the dancing, you can see on the screen how the father, right before he enters the circle, you can see he takes off his jacket, he puts it down on the chair. And as the father is entering the circle and the camera is following him, all of a sudden, for some strange reason, the camera pans back to that spot where the jacket's lying on the chair. And they see in the video how the father of the kala reaches into the pocket of the chassan's father's jacket and takes out the envelope. And you can imagine as the family is sitting there watching this video, and they see that the kala's father is stealing the envelope out of the chassan's father's jacket. You can imagine, they pause the video, everyone stops, they all turn, everyone in the room turns, they face the kala's father. The Cha Hashem at Stakov Alanu Boshas upon him. That we're caught red-handed. That a Kadosh Baruch Hu looks at us during these days, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu says, let's talk for real, I've got the video. Let's take a look, let's make a cheshbon and nefesh together. A person sometimes thinks, we could beat the system, we could trick people, we could trick our friends, we could trick our parents, we could trick our spouse, we could trick our chavrusa. Right? We can't trick our children so well. Children seem to always know what their parents are up to. Right? But we can't trick the Rabbanu Shel. In the Rambam's Yud Gimel Ikarim, where it's printed in the Siddur, Ani Mamin B'Muna Shleima, Sha'aboris Baruch Shema Yodea Kol Maisa B'nei Adam V'chol Machshavosa. Shenemar quotes the Pasuk in Tehillim Lamed Gimel, Hayotzer Yachad Libam, Hamivin Al Kol Ma'aseim. You can't fake out the Rabbanu Shel. You can trick yourself if you go your whole life tricking yourself. And you can trick a lot of people, even in your inner sphere. But at the end of the day, we need your tzedaka. We need your rachmanis. If there's any night where we're going to come face to face with reality, we're going to admit it and try to get it, and try to understand what's happened this past year, and to take stock and to try to do something different in the coming year. But it starts with the Jew acknowledging what happened, facing the metzias, facing the facts. In the Mir Yeshiva, one of the great Rashi Yeshiva, son-in-law of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, took over, was one of the Rashi Yeshiva after Rav Chaim Shmulevitz passed away in the 1970s. He was only a Rashi Yeshiva for a short period of time, one of the great Magidei Shir. It was beautiful Chidushei Rav Nachum on Shas, Rav Nachum Pertzavitz. Rav Nachum Pertzavitz, his son-in-law, he was one of the biggest Shirim in the world today, 700 people in the Mir. Rav Nachum was known as a genius in Pshat, in explaining the true intent of the Gemara. So Rav Nachum one time, he walks into the Beis Medrash, and there are two fellows in Mir, they're standing there by their shtender, and they're battling a little bit, schmoozing a little bit. They happens to be the yeshiva is learning Maseches Nedarim that time. And all of a sudden they look up and they see Rav Nachum, they see the Rosh Yeshiva coming their way. So one of the friends says, motions to the other, you better get back to the learning. Rav Nachum's about to walk by, and immediately, they pull out their thumbs, and they're delving right back into it. So one of them goes, as Rav Nachum passes, all of a sudden he goes, Tanu Rabbanan. So Rav Nachum stops, and he smiles at them. He says, Chevre, it's so good to see that you're learning. But I just want to point out that the words Tanu Rabbanan don't appear one time in Maseches Nedarim. Not once in Maseches Nedarim does it say Tanu Rabbanan. Nope. How are you going to talk your way out of that? The postscript to the story is they told the story to Rav Chaim Kanievsky. This was printed in Yeshurun, one of the Torah journals that comes out. every year or so. And they told us, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Rav Chaim Kanievsky started smiling and laughing. So I said, no, Rebbe, what's so funny? So Rav Chaim said, it's true, it doesn't say, you can see like he's like, you know, quickly going through the blot. He says, it's true, it doesn't say Tanu Rabbanan and Maseches Nedarim. But he says in one place on Chaf Zayin and Aleph, it does say Dit Tanu Rabbanan. It does say Dit Tanu Rabbanan. So it could be a limud zchus on these bachrim. A person has to start. We start tonight. L'cha Hashem has stuck of Alano Bush is upon him. There's nowhere to run. We're not going to outsmart HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're not going to be able to fake it till we make it. That we sit down with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we take Achrayas. Listen to the words of Rav Kook in the Oros HaTshuva. Echad me'ayisodos shel tshuva. B'machshavto shel adam. One of the basic, most basic things that a Jew who's serious about doing tshuva needs to accept and realize. He akaras ha'achrayas shel adam al masach. That a person takes Achrayas for what he's done. That we begin tonight, L'cha Hashem atzlaka v'lanu boshes upon him. That a Jew says, we made some mistakes, we made some very serious mistakes, and in Bona Shalom we want to change. But it only starts, says Rav Kook, when a person first takes Achrayas upon himself. And a person realizes the severity, the seriousness of what he's done. And then we can begin the process of rebuilding. So once we've taken that upon ourselves, and again, it's a process, it's not you hear a vart about it and now we've done it, but once we've recognized that that's a integral part of what we're trying to do tonight. So now the question becomes, so how did we get into this mess to begin with? How is it possible that in the Shama that was Tachas Kisei HaKavod, a Chelek Elokam Mimal, a holy spark from on high that's sent to this world on a very, very important mission, how is it that we lose ourselves? How is it that we give ourselves over to such cheap and lowly averos sometimes? How is it that we allow ourselves to take in a Shama, to drag it through the mud? How does that happen? How does a Jew allow such a thing to happen? So I want to start by sharing a quote. It's a little bit outside the Beis Medrash. I hope no one will take offense. The truth is, it's mamish not only outside the Beis Medrash, it's mamish outside the yeshuv, it's outside of civilization. It's mamish from the forest, it's from the fields, literally. I want to share with you a quote, a passage that I saw a little while back, and I've been thinking about it a lot in Chodesh Elul, from Henry David Thoreau. I teach in YU, Torah Mada, you'll be mochome. Henry David Thoreau, one of the great American writers, a transcendentalist philosopher, mid-19th century. But it's hard, it's a strange place. I understand it's a strange place to start a drasha for slichos. But the truth is, if you listen to this quote, and if you think about the life that he lived, that shaped the background of this quote, it's very hard to not have respect for such a person. On July 4th, 1845, Thoreau decided he was done with the world. He was done with society. He was done with other people shaping his opinions and beliefs, and he decided, that's it, I'm going out into the forest. And for two years he decided, I'm going to live simply and experiment in simple living, is what he referred to it as. 2 years he spent in a self-made house by Walden Pond in Massachusetts. Of course, in the 1950s, he published his famous work, Walden, recounting that experience, what it was like to be in the forest. Amish, 2 years to try to tap into something beyond this world. To not allow the speed of society, of the city life, to take over his existence. To mamish sit for 2 years in a self-built cabin in the forest and to do his bodhis. It's amazing to see Rabbi Nachman Sashva on America. Rabbi Nachman passed away in 1810. Thoreau was born in 1817. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov apparently had a tremendous hashpa that an American transcendentalist philosopher wants to go sit in the woods for mamish for 2 years to try to think about something beyond this world. So listen to this quote from Thoreau. It's a well-known passage in Walden. I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not, when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. To live deliberately. To not wait till a person's dead to figure out what he missed out on of real living. I do not wish to live what was not life. Living is so dear. Nor did I wish to practice resignation, unless it was quite necessary. I wanted to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life. To live so sturdily and Spartan-like as to put to rout all that was not life. To cut a broad swath and to shave close. To drive life into a corner and reduce it to its lowest terms. And if it proved to be mean, why then to get the whole and genuine meanness out of it and publish its meanness to the world. Or if it were sublime,
If life were sublime, to know it by experience and be able to give a true account of it in my next excursion. What does it mean to live deliberately? What does he mean when he says, I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately? What was he seeking in the woods? What was he trying to find? And what does it mean to Torah true Jews like ourselves who want to come back to Kadosh Baruch Hu this time of the year? So I want to go back to last week's parsha. Last week not being the parsha read this morning, last week being Kiseitze. And I want to talk about the greatest enemy of Klal Yisrael. The greatest enemy of Klal Yisrael, of course, is Amalek. We all know that well. The pasuk tells us, V'haya baniach Hashem Elokecha lecha michol oivecha. After you vanquish all of your other enemies, all of the people around you, all of the other forces that cause a Jew to stray, gets him into trouble, wages war against Klal Yisrael, and you settle into the land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you, don't forget, Timcha Zecher Amalek Mitachas Hashemayim Lo Tishka. Don't forget to destroy the ultimate enemy of Klal Yisrael, which is Amalek. And I don't need to prove to anyone, I don't need to prove to you that Amalek is our greatest enemy. We all know that too well. We've all experienced it firsthand. There's a lot written about Amalek in the Svarim. They try to help us to appreciate the severity, the intensity, the evil of Amalek. I saw the scholar Rebbe writes in his Sefer Tzemach David, brings a beautiful remez. He says the gematria of the pasuk at the end of Parshas Beshalach, Ki yad al keska milchama la Hashem ba'amalek. The milchama of Hashem, Hashem's battle against Amalek is midor dor. He says the gematria of that pasuk from beginning to end, Ki yad al keska milchama la Hashem ba'amalek midor dor, is gematria shor, bor, mave, and hever, which are the dalid with the arba avos nezikin that begin Maseches Bava Kamma. The root of all damage, of all destruction, of all that's broken in this world, that's mamish the melchama against Amalek. But we don't need a remez to get Amalek. We don't need to read the drasha that's printed in the Sefer Mechitzas Rabbeinu from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. A drasha he gave at a bar mitzvah, where he turned to the bar mitzvah boy, to the young bar mitzvah boy, and he said, our world is literally full of Amalek. And we need you, bar mitzvah boy, to become a soldier for Kavod Shemayim. It's a beautiful drasha, but we don't need to read that to understand who Amalek is. And we don't even need to know what the Ramchal teaches us in the Maimar HaChachma, where he says that during these days when we daven over and over and over again, that Hashem, please, once and for all, remove the Memshelas HaZadon, remove the evil empire, so to speak, from the entire world, from the entire Bria. And the Maharal explains that, who is this Memshelas Zadon that we speak of? Who is this Memshelas Zadon? The Maharal, the Ramchal rather, identifies it as Amalek. The Memshelas Zadon, the root of all that is evil in this world. We don't need these Maharal Makomas, as much as they're important and they help to deepen our understanding of Amalek. We don't need anyone to prove to us and explain to us who Amalek is. Because unfortunately, we all know very well, we all know very, very well who Amalek is. Yes, we've never had the opportunity. It's hard for us sometimes to even understand the mitzvah of destroying the physical Amalek, the biological Amalek. But in terms of the Amalek Shebe Nefesh, the Amalek that resides inside of us, which all the Svarim HaKadoshim say, that is real Nechias Amalek. When a Jew wages battle against his Yetzer Hara, says the Apter Rav, says the Avodas Yisrael, says the Oev Yisrael, I'm not correcting myself. The Oev Yisrael, the Apter Rav is the Oev Yisrael, and the Avodas Yisrael is the Kadosh Ramag. Okay? So the Oev Yisrael, and the Avodas Yisrael, and the Svasemes, v'chulu, 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 they all say that Amalek is the Yetzer Hara. Rav Chatzkel Levenstein said, it's true, today we don't have the opportunity to fight Amalek, the nation. But says Rav Chatzkel, the great Mashkiach of Mir, as I ikur mitzvahs mechias Amalek bizmanenu hi, la'akor es koach tumas Amalek, shebekerav libo, shall call adam va'adam. The Amalek that resides within, the Amalek that we know very, very well, the Amalek that we've all encountered every single time we've done in the Veira, that's the Amalek that we're still fighting today. And there can't be Yom Kippur, and there can't be Geula, and there can't be Rosh Hashanah, and there can't be Tshuva, and there can't be anything that we're longing for during these days, until a Jew decides it's time to get serious about fighting against the Amalek. Listen to the words of Rav Soloveitchik. This is from his volume, Before Hashem You Shall Be Purified. Hashem's sovereignty, in a sense, is not absolute as long as Amalek continues to exist. Every Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, in each Shemona Esrei, we request that Hashem accepts the crown that is being offered. Keser Melucha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Keser Yitnu Lecha, we're so badly trying to give you the crown. We want to show you, Hashem, that we recognize your Malchus. writes Rav Soloveitchik, yet tragically, as long as a Malik exists, he does not accept the crown. Hashem says, you can't call me Melech. I'm not willing to accept the crown. Who then is a Malik whose presence somehow inhibits Hashem's sovereignty? When Hashem created the earth from tohu vavohu, chaos and void, He did not replace the chaos entirely. A Malik represents the leftover chaos, identified with sin, which remained behind so that man himself can actively play a role in destroying it. The Jew must eternally battle this insidious enemy, the tohu vavohu that resides within each and every one of us. During the Yom Noram, the imperative of this battle is the destruction of sin within ourselves. Milchama l'Hashem ba'malik midor dor. A bit of a malik exists within everyone. And through our attempt at its destruction, we at the same time endeavor to coronate Hashem, to give Hashem that crown that we so badly want to give Him once and for all. Yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu's sovereignty is curbed, so to speak, to the extent that we fall short of the total eradication of sin. There is no Rosh Hashanah, there is no Yom Kippur, there is no Tshuva, and there is no Geula until a Jew is prepared to fight against the Malik. So if we want to do Tshuva, we have to study the technique of a Malik. We have to understand why it is that a Malik keeps winning this battle year after year after year. And why HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps refusing, in the ultimate sense, to accept our crown. And it's very pashut. What's the technique that a Malik uses time and time again? You go back to the Psukim, and a Malik is Asher Karcha Baderach. A Malik comes to a Jew, and he meets him when he's on the Derech. We've been saying in Ledavid, Horeini Hashem Darkech, Hashem, I'm trying to get on the Derech. I'm trying to find my way. You look at the Navi Yishai in Perek Mem Gimel, he writes, Hanosin Bayam Derech. The Arizal and Kisvei Arizal, this farm discuss, that this is the Pasuk, Hanosin Bayam Derech, to pave a way through the sea. That's the Pasuk that somehow, in Kisvei Arizal, and the Kavanas of the Arizal corresponds to the tshuva that we're trying to produce in Chodesh El, leading into the Yom Nara. To find that derech, the derech ha-emes, by which a Jew can live his life. And comes along a Malik, asher karcha ba-derech, and they try to get us to choose a life of mikra. What does it mean to live a life of mikra? Where my life is happenstance, where I live a life of passivity, where everything that I encounter with a certain casualness, with a lack of seriousness, where a Jew just kind of goes about his business and he gets by. And every time a Jew is living in that world of mikra, when we allow the world to just happen around us, when we're not seizing life, so to speak, by the horns, and living deliberately, the way that Thoreau describes his experience of trying to encounter the divine in that forest for 2 years, when a Jew enters that world of mikra, and he's satisfied maintaining a casual relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's where a Jew falls into averus. The Maharal says, averus are not who we are. Every time we do an averus, the Maharal writes in many places, it's an expression of something mikra, it's happenstance. It's not supposed to be that way. It's a Jew who's not mindful, who's not thinking. His mind is off and his heart is off, and a carelessness sets in our lives. We become passive, we become casual with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, casual with averus, we befriend our arch enemy, Amalek, and before you know it, a Jew starts to slip up, and the averus start to pile up. And then my whole life becomes that cynicism, that lowly cynicism of a Malik, where a person becomes scornful of life itself. I want to read you a small piece from the LA Times, August 14th, 2003. It was written by Ellen Langer. Ellen Langer is a professor of psychology at Harvard. She wrote some important books on mindfulness in the early 1990s. And she wrote about this after a college professor was traveling to work one morning with his child in the back seat, Rachmana Litzlan, and the professor forgot to drop off the child, mindlessly forgot to drop off the child at daycare, left the baby in the car, and Rachmana Litzlan, the baby, died that day in the back seat of the car. And she writes in the LA Times, 2003, one of the first questions is, what was this man thinking? What was the professor thinking? The unfortunate answer, probably nothing. This horrible story is the result of mindlessness, which is not confined to the proverbial absent-minded professor who has more important things to think about. Indeed, it is hard to imagine that there was anything more important to him than his son. Mindlessness is more ubiquitous than most people realize. And it is only after dramatic events like this that we sit up and take notice. When a person realizes my life has become mikra, I'm not concentrating, I'm not focused, my relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu is not what it's supposed to be. We don't notice how often we are mindless, because when we are mindless, for all intents and purposes, we're not there to notice. Yet the price we pay is real, even if what happens is not as tragic as this. And then she writes, in the 25 years I've been studying this, I've learned that the consequences of mindlessness include things like accidents, burnout, poor job performance, memory problems, interpersonal difficulties, and health problems. Our mindlessness essentially turns the body off. On the other hand, listen to this quote, on the other hand, when we are mindful, we are literally more alive. When a Jew is mindful, when a Jew is alert, when a Jew is not allowing that world of mikra, that world of a malik, to dictate how a Jew is going to live his or her life, a person becomes alive. There's a chilas that's flowing through a person. Rabbi Pesach Kron was in town last Shabbos. He spoke at Beth Abraham. And he spoke between Mincha Ma'arav, and he told the following story. He said he heard it from Rebbetzin Blaustein, a maisa that happened with Rosh Shlomo Freifeld Zatzal. Rosh Freifeld, unfortunately, didn't live a very long life. He passed away at the age of 66. And at one point when Rosh Freifeld was very not well, there was a young couple who was getting married. They wanted very badly that Rosh Freifeld should be able to come to the Sheva Brachos. So they called him up and they said, Rebbe, can you come? He said, I'm not up to it. But if you make the Sheva Brachos in my house, I can be there. That much I can do. So one morning for breakfast, they came to the Freifeld and they had Sheva Brachos. And Rosh Shlomo Freifeld, who I never met but is one of my heroes, got up and he spoke and he shared the following story from the Kotzker. He said the Kotzker one time was traveling around, going from village to village. And he came to a particular village, and people came to get a bracha from the Kotzker. And a little boy came before the fiery one, the Sarf Mikotsk, and he came to get a bracha, and he was there with some other boys from his class, from his cheder, and the Rebbe was there. And the Kotzker turns to one of the little boys and says, Nu, tell me, what are you learning? So he says to the Rebbe, he says to the Kotzker, he says, we're finishing up Parshas Bereishis. We're in Parakei of Parshas Bereishis. So the Kotzker says, Nu, let me hear a pasuk, a little taich. So the boy, you know, he's nervous, a hair by the Kotzker. Okay, so he starts to recite the pasuk. The Psukim in Parakei of Bereishis lists the generations. Adam and Chase. It goes through the history of mankind. Those early generations, the first 10 generations. So the little boy begins. He says, Vayechi Adam. And Adam lived. Right? Said it in Yiddish. And Adam had galept. And Adam lived. And then the pasuk goes on. It says, he lived 930 years. Vayamos. And there is gestorben. And then he died. Then he goes to the next pasuk. Vayechi Sheis, and Sheis lived 912 years. Vayamos, and he died. And he's going through the psukim. Vayechi Enosh, and Enosh lived 905 years. Vayamos, and he died. And the Kotzker says, Nein, that's not how you touch the pasuk. Little boy is so nervous. So he says, do it again. He says, do it again. Read the pasuk again. So he's nervous. He starts again. Vayechi Adam, and Adam had galept, and Adam lived 930 years. Vayamos, and he died. And he's going through it again. He says, no, it's not how you read the Kotzker. No, Kotzker is the Kotzker. It's very, no, it's not how you read the Pasuk. So the little boy's looking at his Rebbe, the Cheder. The Rebbe's going, you know, I don't know what the Kotzker wants. So Kotzker says, I'll tell you how to read the Pasuk. I'll teach you how to read the Pasuk. The Kotzker closes his eyes. And the Kotzker says, Vayechi Adam. He screams out, and Adam had galept. Vayamos, and he died. Vayechi Sheis, and Sheis lived. Then in a whisper, Vayamos, and he died. And Rav Freifeld said, I want to offer a pshat in a pasuk that we all know from Halo. Lo amus ki echya. Lo amus ki echya, we often interpret, Lo amus, I will not die, ki echya, because I'm alive. Rav Freifeld said, no, it's not the way to read the pasuk. Lo amus, I'm not going to be dead, ki echya, while I'm alive. I'm not going to allow my life to, I'm not going to allow the Vayechi and the Vayamos to be the same thing. The Vayechi has to be fiery, it has to be passionate. It has to be a person who chooses life, a person who's bocher b'chaim, a person who wants to live life in a deep and rich way, to suck the marrow out of life, like we saw that quote from Thoreau. That's how a person lives their life. Lo amos kiyach, I'm not going to allow myself to be a walking dead man. And unfortunately, when you enter into that world of a malik, that world of mikra, where a Jew is just Vayechi, Vayamos, Vayechi, Vayamos, a Jew goes about another day, I'm alive, and then I go to sleep, and I'm dead, right? Come out dead. And a person goes through that their whole life, back and forth, and back and forth. It's a terrible tragedy. That's the world of Mikra, that's the world of a Malik. Remember 2 years ago, it was Pesach. I was davening, doesn't matter where, because it could have been too many shuls. And I was davening in a shul, and you know, on Pesach by the laning, when you get to the end of the laning, you see people start to really, you know, their eyes light up. What is everyone so excited about?
It's not only Pesach, it's other times of the year. Yeah, Chavinoz? Right? Novad olas haboker shel olas tamid tasu es eila ka'eila. Right? Like the most famous word in all of Chamisha Chumshei Torah. That ka'eila. So the Baal Korah has different techniques. It's like the same thing that he has to do by Haman. You either try to get the Haman in before the people make the noise, or you pause, you try to fake out, let them make the noise, and then you say Haman. Right, so the Baal Korah, sometimes he pauses, lets the whole tzibur have their fun, ka'ela, and then he says, then he lands, or sometimes he'll rush it, and then the tzibur sings along, ka'ela. And I remember on Pesach 2 years ago, I'm thinking to myself, Ribbono Shel Olam, and I hope it wasn't a kitrug on Klal Yisrael. It was meant to be a sincere tefillah asking Hashem for help. I said, Ribbono Shel Olam, is this the extent of the Islamists amongst Klal Yisrael? Like the whole davening, everyone's sleeping. Right? There's nothing that you see Jews shuffling in and out of a Shabbos, of a Yom Tov. But when Ka'ela comes around, all of a sudden everyone so enthused, so excited. Is that the extent of the chiyus of Klal Yisrael? That he gets excited to sing along Ka'ela? This morning we read, in this morning's parsha, we read about Vidoy Meiser. And Vidoy Meiser, we meet a very good Jew. Who at the end of every 3 years of the miniature cycle of the Shemitah year, on Erev Pesach, a Jew comes up and he declares before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bi'arti HaKodesh Min HaBayis, I'm all paid up. I paid the Levi, I paid the Kohen, everything's paid up. Maaser Ani, Maaser Sheni, everything's paid up. Kechol mitzvasecha asher tzivisani lo avarti mitzvasecha v'lo shachachti. Hashem, I did everything you asked me to do. So all the Svarim ask, so then why is it called Vidoy Meiser? Vidoy is everything I didn't do. Ashamnu, bagadnu, I got this wrong, got that wrong. Why am I saying Vidoy? What kind of vidoy is it when I say kechol mitzvosecha asher tivisani lo avarti mitzvosecha v'lo shachachti? I did everything right. And all the Svarim explain, because you can have a Jew who does everything right within the letter of the law, and it's just a checklist. It's just a done, yotze, shkayach. You check it off the list. A person did what he was supposed to do. A person's living on autopilot. A person living a mindless existence. And a person who's living that way has to say, Vidoy, Vidoy, Hashem, it's true, I did your mitzvahs. I did go to shul. And I did keep Shabbos. And I did everything that you asked me to do, Rabban Shalom. But I did it like a person who was living a life of mikra, of a shakarcha v'derech. It wasn't a Jew who was seizing the derech ha'emes and living a life that expresses that. So now we come to the Yom Naram, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a chance to fix everything. And in the next number of weeks, we have a choice to make. It's the choice that we're going to encounter in the Kriyas HaTorah for the coming Shabbos. When the Torah tells us, Ha'adosi b'chem ha'yom es ha'shamayim v'sa'aretz ha'chayim v'ha'mavis nasati l'fanecha. We're at a time where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is being done. There's Chaim and Mavis. The books of Chaim and Mavis are open before us. Ha'bracha v'ha'klala. U'v'acharta b'chayim l'man tichy. We have the choice to live deliberately. To not live asher karcha v'derech. To not allow life to just pass us by. V'ayichi v'ayamos. But to live deliberately. Uvacharta b'chaim l'man tichya. Rav Leib Eger in the Torah's MS, this coming week's Parsha, has a beautiful var. He says, Uvacharta b'chaim l'man tichya. Whenever we see that word l'man in Torah, it's a code word. There's three l'mans. The Bach talks about three l'mans. The Bach and Simen Chesav. Beginning of Or HaChaim. The Bach says we have l'man by tzitzis, we have l'man by tefillin, we have l'man by sukkah. Laman yedu dorasechem kibusukos ashafti. What does that laman demand of us? The laman means a certain mindfulness. That when you sit in the sukkah, if you want to fulfill the mitzvah, you have to know why you're sitting in the sukkah. Sit in the sukkah, laman yedu, so that you should know something. Says Rav Leib Eger. The pasuk tells us, uvacharta b'chaim laman tichya. Choose life. Why? Laman, so that you will live. If you're mindful of life, if you understand what it means to be bocher b'chaim, then you're really living. But if a person's on autopilot, if a person's in that world of mikra, it could look like you're living a life. But like Rav Feifeld said, lo amus ki echya. God forbid, lo amus, don't allow me to be dead when I'm alive. Let a person be truly alive. V'chart b'chaim l'man tichya. I saw in Revolbi's writings on Chumash, in the Shigurei Chumash, Parshas Vayigash, he says that Yaakov comes before Paro, a famous scene, a sad scene. Yaakov comes before Paro, and Paro says, tell me, how old are you? And Yaakov responds to Paro, Vayomer Yaakov Aparo, Yimei Shnei Migurai Shloshim As Shana. The years of my life for 130 years. Ma'at V'ra'im Hayu Yimei Shnei Chayai. But my life has been short and difficult. Rav Volbi says, I heard from Rav Breuer in Frankfurt.
I heard from Rav Breuer, the pshat in the pasuk is as follows. Why did Yaakov have this whole arichus? He asked him a simple question. I'm 130, period. This is a long, this whole answer. It's been a difficult life, and I didn't live as long as the avos. I didn't ask for your whole... just tell me how old you are. It's all Paro was looking for. So Rav Breuer said, Yaakov was teaching Paro, there's different types of living. There's Yemei Megura, you want to know how long I have physically passed through planet Earth? You don't want to know how long I've been on this planet? 130 years. But you want to know how many of those years were Shnei Chayai? How many of those years I really lived? I had a tough life. And some of those years that I was alive, I didn't really feel like I was living. That's what Yaakov was saying to Paro. There's Yemei Megurai, and then there's Yemei Chayai. And there's a distinction, there's a difference between the type of life we're living. It's not all the same. Qualitatively, it's not the same. Quantitatively, it's not the same. The moments that we're living are the moments that really count towards our life. And therefore, v'acharta b'chaim l'man techia. There was a young man, he was in his 30s, a young married man, he wasn't well, and his father walked into the room and he said, listen, I know you feel like giving up on life. You're very sick, it would be easy for you to give up on life. But I'm telling you, there's a mitzvah in the Torah, perhaps it's a mitzvah d'araisa, a mitzvah sasei, uvacharta b'chaim. And therefore he says, I want to give you a bracha, that if you choose life, if you choose to be bocher b'chaim, even though it hurts right now, I give you a bracha, you'll have a full recovery, and I give you a bracha, you should be blessed with a child within the year. And this young man, Rabbi Avraham Mordechai, decided, as his father walked out of the room, he decided, I'm going to choose life. And he turned to the Ribono Shel Olam and he said, I'm choosing life, Ribono Shel Olam, and I want my father's bracha to come true, and if I have that child, if it's a baby boy, I'll name him Yehuda. The same way that Leah named her son, Hapam Odes Hashem, to say thank you to Hashem, I'm going to name that child Yehuda. Who was the Avraham Mordechai in the story? Who was the father? Who was the grandchild that was born a year later? The Chedush Arim, the first Ger Rebbe. His son Avraham Mordechai. And of course, who is that child? Who's the Yehuda? The Yehuda Leib? The Sfas Emes. The Halig is Sfas Emes, the Ger Rebbe. Was born because his father chose life. And when I read this story, in a little biography of the Sfas Emes, a little Hebrew biography, I realized it's Sfas Emes L'Shitaso. It's his whole life story. Because when the Sfas Emes passed away at a relatively young age of 58, when the Sfas Emes passed away at the age of 58, at the Levi, thousands of people came into that train station that day. And as the Imre Emes, who carried the name of the Sfas Emes' father, Avraham Mordechai, as he was walking with his brother Moshe Betzal to the Levaya, he turned to his brother and he said, ah, we're fortunate. Our father had a Richas Yamin. Our father had a Richas Yamin. So Moshe Betzal turned to his brother, the Imre Emes, who would become the next Rebbe of Ger, and he said, my dear brother, our father was 58 years old. That's not such a long life. That's not a Richas Yamin. So he says, you're not listening. I didn't say our father had a Richas Shanim. I said our father had a richas yamim. He had langa teg, he had long days. Our father Phil, think about what he accomplished in those 58 years of life. The Sfas Emes was born out of the bechiras, the bechira b'chaim of his father. That his father was bocher b'chaim, and that became the marching order, so to speak, of the Sfas Emes. After the war, the Klausenberger Rebbe was in a DP camp. And there were countless Jews, broken Jews, and it was this time of the year. And the Klausenberger Rebbe got up one time and he roared before the tzibur. He said, what are we saying Ashamnu Bagadnu about? Ashamnu Bagadnu is a Jew has the ability to choose. We had nothing to choose. The Nazis, Yimach Shalom, took away everything from us. Who are we clapping al chayt for? Ashamnu Bagadnu, what did we do wrong? And the Klausenberger Rebbe looked at those pale and frail Jews and he answered his own question. Klausenberger Rebbe said, you know what our chayt is? There were times throughout the war where we stopped fulfilling Uvacharta Bachayt. That a Jew always has to be bocher b'chaim, no matter how bad the situation looks, no matter how crazy the world around him is, no matter how many averus we do, and it feels like it's not worth trying to start over again. A Jew has an achrayas to be bocher b'chaim, to choose life time and time again. There's a Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, and I know I only have 2 minutes left, but there's a Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah that describes the three books that are open before us this time of the year. HaKadosh Baruch Hu opens up three books, Rav Krispadai, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Shalosh Asvarim Niftachim Rosh Hashanah. One for the Rishayim, one for the Tzadikim Gemurin, one for the Beinonim, and the books are open before us. And we imagine, the way we understand this, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides, depending on our behavior, He's going to put us in this book, He's going to put us in that book. It's frightening, it's confusing, we don't really understand what it means. We read in this morning's parsha that a Jew has to go to the Kohen Asher Yeh Bayamim Ahem. So I want to share with you the interpretation of the Kohen. One of the most important Kohanim in Klal Yisrael. The Toldos Yaakov Yosef. The Toldos Yaakov Yosef was the Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, the first one to put the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh's teachings into print. The first real work of Chassidus ever published. And the Toldos Yaakov Yosef writes in Parshas Ki Tse'etzeh, I'll tell you what's really happening when the three books are open. The Gimel Svarim Niftachim, he writes, V'zeu inin Gimel Svarim, Shinosnin l'kol echad breira be'eza sefer rotza shiyah nichta. He writes such a strange thing. You decide what book you want to be in. You pick. Rosh Hashanah is coming, the books are open. You decide, do I want to put myself in the book of Chaim? Do I want to put myself in the book of Tzaddik and Gemurim? Do I want to be in the book of Rishon? Do I want to label myself a Benoni? It's a strange piece of Torah, because who in their right mind wouldn't put themselves in the Sifron Shel Tzaddikim? Who's not going to sign himself, he's going to write himself in the book of Chaim? But the answer is, as the Toldos Yaakov Yosef explains, to put yourself in the Sifron Shel Tzaddikim, to put yourself in the book of Chaim, a person be'emes has to be bocher b'chaim. You have to throw off that mantle of asher karcha b'derech that we've been wearing for all these years, and you have to say, Rabbono Shalom, uvacharit b'chaim l'man tichya. This year I'm really going to choose life. And then, like we say in the Tana Tokef, the scariest part of the davening, then you choose which book you want to sign yourself in. V'chosim yad kol adam bo. You write, it's not Hashem filling out the books. You decide which book you want to put yourself in. How do we do this? I can't tell you how we do this. There's no way I can express in words how we do this. Only each of us in our own way can figure out how we make that commitment. V'chart b'chayim l'man tichya. To choose to live differently. To choose to not live in that world of Asher Karcha B'Derech anymore. And to allow ourselves to be penciled into that book. These days are Yomei Ratzon. These are days where a Jew gets his Ratzon back. Where we decide that we have the ability to choose. That we're going to be Balbatim over ourselves. We're going to take charge. We're not going to allow a Malik to call the shots anymore. There's not going to be this world of Mikra, this passivity, this casualness. It's not going to be Asher Karcha B'Derech anymore. But a Jew is going to make a choice to live deliberately. And that's the words of David Melch we've been saying all these days. Achas she'alti me'es Hashem osa avakish. I saw someone shared with me, Rav Nevin Saul, in his writings on Chumash and Parshas Sav. Rav Nevin Saul says such a beautiful thing. David Melch omer la'Hashem, ani be'emes rotze u'mevakish es ma'ashe she'alti b'feh. For a lot of people, achas she'alti, the thing that I'm asking is not really osa avakish. It's not really what I desire. I'm saying the right thing because it's the right thing to say. David Melch teaches us, Achas she'alti, Rabbono Shalom. What do I want from you? I want to be close to you, Rabbono Shalom. Osa avakesh, and that's what I really want. Uvacharta b'chaim l'man tichya. In a moment from now, we're going to begin to daven, to pour out our hearts to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Nevin Saul says, you can daven, the halacha says you can daven in any language. You know why? Because the words is not what matters. Says Rav Nevin Saul, ki ikar hu argashas halev. Does a Jew feel? The emes, is he margish chaim? Someone wrote to Rav Wolfson, they asked Rav Moshe Wolfson, tell me, what is chassidus? But Wolfson says, I can't explain to you what chassidus is. And if you ask me what life is, I couldn't explain to you what life is. But Rav Wolfson writes in that letter, Omnam ani margish chaim. If you're feeling it, you know what it is. If you've ever tasted it, if you've ever experienced it, tamu ru'u, then you know what it is. Ask yourself, is the achas she'alti of my life, osa avakish, is that what I truly desire? Is that what I'm really seeking? So we'll end where we started. I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately. I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately. Every single one of us now, we go out into that expanse. The way the Baal Tani describes HaMelech Basad, every Jew is out in the field right now. We're looking for the Melech. Before the king comes to the palace. We're trying to get there before we have to encounter him in the more frightening way. When the Melech is in the palace. But we're walking out into the woods, out into the field, to greet Melech Malchi and Lachem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And to declare before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Achas She'alti Me'es Hashem Osa Avakish. Uvacharta V'chaim L'man Tichya. To choose life. To leave that world of Amalek, that world of Mikra, that world of Chet, that world of Asher Karcha B'Derech, to leave that whole world behind. And to choose the life that HaKadosh Baruch Hu envisions for us. And Amir Tashem, and each and every one of us make that choice. Uvacharta b'chaim l'man tichya. So that we can truly live. Lo amus ki echya. I'm not going to allow myself to be dead while I'm alive. I'm going to have a richas yom like the Sfasem, as long a tek. Then Amir Tashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will look back towards each and every one of us. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu once again will be Bocher, Ba'amo Yisrael, Ba'ahava. Hashem will choose each and every one of us in a way with the love that only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can shower upon Klal Yisrael. And Amir Tashem, each and every one of us in Gantz Klal Yisrael will be Zocha to Chsiva V'Chsimatov.